And think for yourself what it would be like to go through life absolutely perfect, with no flaws, no blemishes. Every single thing you do is absolutely perfect.
Such a perfect specimen.
It's a perfect night for mystery and horror. The air itself is filled with monsters.
Perfect.
Hi, welcome to the Perfect Podcast. I'm Ken Kessler, supportive husband, along with the author, Lisa Kessler, also known as L.A. Kessler. Hi, Lisa.
Hi.
We're here to talk about the thriller Perfect, which is due out in a couple weeks, the first book in the Genesis trilogy, a series of thrillers by L.A. Kessler, who is also Lisa Kessler. And we've talked about that before in a previous episode of this podcast. If you missed it, go grab it and listen to it. We'll wait. Okay, we're not really going to wait, but you can pause this one and then come back to it. One of the things we teased last week that we were going to talk about Stephen King, and you don't hear that name mentioned with a lot of paranormal romance authors. When talking about your paranormal romance novels, and especially your short stories, you have often cited Ray Bradbury as a major source of inspiration. Perfect, however, owes a lot to Stephen King. Can you explain his influence on this new book?
So when I got the idea for Perfect, I already had shared the story about magazines starting to use Photoshop, and the idea had popped in my head of what if, you know, you had to be perfect? What if your life depended on it? And when I started to write the book, I felt like this is a book that has three main parts. So it has the birth of Juliet, and then when they're 9 years old, a big event happens and she makes contact with the outside world. She does not go outside, but she opens the door. And I realized that it would not be as powerful unless we were actually there with her the night she opens the door. And so when I started writing Perfect, I was really very heavily influenced by Stephen King because I loved reading Stephen King books. And Hearts in Atlantis was one of my favorites because we got to live it, you know, with the kids as they grew up and, you know, and all that kind of thing. And so when I was writing Perfect, I had a lot of those kind of influences were definitely in there. Stand By Me, Hearts in Atlantis, possibly even a little bit of It did that also, where they're children and then they're adults. So definitely I had a lot of Stephen King in me when I was writing this book.
You know, a lot of publishing likes to put writers in boxes of whatever genre they write. And when people think about Stephen King, they, of course, think about horror. And usually when you think about horror, what most people think about are the movies, the slashers, the buckets of blood, the monsters, the psycho killers, all of that kind of stuff. And that's not what Perfect is about. So if you're thinking that, well, she mentioned Stephen King, this is going to be some kind of knife-wielding psychopath, I don't even know what, but that's not what Perfect is all about. And I'm pretty sure you could explain this better than I am as I stumble through it. What would you say about Perfect as a thriller that is inspired by Stephen King, but does not copy that kind of path that people usually associate with Stephen King?
Well, I would point out that a lot of times people associate, you know, the slasher things with Stephen King, but most of his books are not like that. They play with your head and they're more about, you know, if you were in that situation, you know, how would this character react? And that is really where Perfect is. When I wrote Perfect, I was constantly in this frame of mind of everything would be new. And what kind of pressure would you be under when you read Perfect and you are in her childhood? You get to go through a day with Juliet. I mean, how would it be that you never have your hands uncovered because they can't risk, you know, a burn or a cut or whatever. And they are very, very careful going up and down the stairs because they can't stub their toe and they can't fall and they can't, you know, so last episode, I read the scene where she becomes imperfect and she falls. And that moment when I was writing the book of what would it be like if you're almost 18 years old and this is the first time you have ever fallen, you know, that moment where she realizes, oh my gosh, this is pain, because she's never felt it in her entire life. And so those kind of things were really fun to play with. And I feel like a lot of Stephen King books do that as well, where these kids are in their, you know, their first ghost, their first everything. And when you're a kid, it's much easier to believe the unbelievable. And so often adults tell you, well, that's impossible, that wouldn't happen. And so when you're reading a horror novel or a thriller novel, suddenly that is on the table. So yeah, there's not buckets of blood, but there's lots of scary playing with your head.
Yeah, that is definitely a hallmark of Stephen King novels. 20, 30 years ago, maybe a little bit more, when people said Stephen King, the image that a lot of people had was Jack Nicholson with an axe in The Shining. And The Shining is one of my favorite books, and there is no axe in that book. That was something for the movie. So, and
well, and I think a lot of people think of Carrie too, you know, with the bucket of blood at the end. And if you've ever read Carrie, it does get a little bloody at the end, but Carrie is so much psychological, you know, what would happen if you could control things with your mind and if your parent thought that made you evil and all that kind of stuff. And so Perfect is more along those lines.
Since Perfect and the two books to follow in the Genesis trilogy are unlike anything that you have previously published, and you've previously published a lot, over 40 books, what other books, authors, movies, TV shows, any of that kind of stuff, would you say are comparable or at least similar in their vein of storytelling to Perfect?
Well, I already mentioned Hearts in Atlantis and Stand By Me, both of those for sure. Also, a little bit of, to toss out some Ray Bradbury, Something Wicked This Way Comes. It has that same kind of flavor as Perfect of these children who are living through something that nobody else would think was possible.
Can you read a short sample from Perfect that is reminiscent or at least inspired by Stephen King?
Yes, I can. This scene comes in the section of the book where they are 9 years old. And there are regular kids because Genesis has their cloning. They do that in small pods so that they're not discovered. So it's a house in a suburb neighborhood. And so in Juliet's neighborhood, there are kids who go to the elementary school. Of course, Juliet is not allowed to go to school because she can't leave the house for threat that she will no longer be perfect. So she stays up in her house, but the kids on the street have briefly seen her up in her upstairs window, and nobody can figure out why she doesn't come out. And the Huffs are not really friendly neighbors. So there are lots of whispers in the neighborhood and on the street about why they homeschool their child and why their kid never comes outside. And so these boys in the neighborhood who live on her street, Billy is our main character. And Billy has his group of friends. And this part always reminds me of Stephen King, because usually there is a group of friends who are kids who have to figure out this mystery. So in this particular scene, Billy and his friend Todd and Zach, they're like three musketeers and they're always together and doing these things. They got together to camp out at Billy's house and they were telling scary stories, and whoever told the scary story would win, and they get like truth or dare kind of consequences. So Todd wins, and he has decided that they are going to sneak over to the Huff's house. It's nighttime now. They're going to sneak over to the Huff's house, and they are going to find proof of, they call her Disease Girl, because the kids have dreamed up that Juliet has a horrible disease, and if she comes out of the house, it could wipe out the neighborhood. So he always rides his bike faster past the Huff house because disease girl is in there, and he just doesn't want to see her up in that window. So here we go. Okay, fine. We saw it. Let's get out of here, Billy whispered. Tom gave him a disgusted frown. We came to find out if Disease Girl exists, not hop the fence and leave. Come on, let's split up and see what we can find. Ooh, splitting up is a bad idea. Zach scanned the shadows. We should stick together and go back to Billy's before we get caught. We'll be fine. And besides, if we split up, we'll find proof faster and then we can get out of here sooner. Todd flashed them a smile. We'll be fast. Billy was ready to agree to anything if it meant they could go home. And within a couple of minutes, he was heading around the side of the A-framed house. He stopped when he came to the trash cans. He'd watched enough episodes of that new show, NCIS, with his mom to know that this was the gold mine for evidence. You could always find clues in other people's garbage. He didn't have a flashlight, but he could look well enough in the pale light from the moon. Donning his dad's work gloves, a good investigator never left fingerprints behind. Billy quickly picked through the Huff's trash. It was hard to concentrate on his task with his heart racing. His eyes kept shifting from the trash up to that side door. What would he do if it opened? He tried to push the thought from his mind and ignore the door, focusing on the task. But what would he do? Run. That is exactly what he would do. He didn't find anything interesting in the first can, but when he lifted the lid of the second can, he found something special. It was a cake box with a bakery sales slip taped to the lid. Billy carefully removed the slip and held it up, trying to read it in the moonlight. Happy 9th birthday, Juliet. Disease Girl was a year younger than him. He folded the slip and stuffed it into the front pocket of his jeans before quietly replacing the lid. This would be enough evidence to get Todd to leave. He turned to go find his friends, but behind him, the doorknob squeaked and turned. Billy froze. Run, bastard, run like the wind! But his body didn't respond. He looked over his shoulder as the door swung open. Whatever horror was about to come through, he wasn't going to be able to get away. He held his breath. He never expected to see her. Juliet. It had to be. She was shorter than him by a couple inches and stood just inside the threshold of the door in a blue flannel nightgown. Her long brown hair fell down past her shoulders, and she had these big brown eyes. Suddenly, he remembered he had no business being in her yard and spun around to leave, when a soft voice stopped him in his tracks. Please, don't go. Billy turned back, surprised to see her smiling. She lifted her hand in a small wave. Hi. Hi, I'm Billy, he pointed toward his house. I live down the street. I know you live nearby. I see you riding your bike to school. Her smile widened into a grin that he found more contagious than he would ever admit. He started to speak, but stopped when he noticed her hand on the doorknob. She was wearing one of those plastic gloves the doctors sometimes wore. Why do you have on doctor gloves? Are you sick? He waited, proud of himself for not blurting out that he knew she had a rare disease that could wipe out their entire neighborhood. He kept his distance, but she didn't seem sick or diseased or anything. Maybe that's how those contagious diseases worked. You couldn't see them, but they were there just waiting to infect you. I always wear them. She held her hands up, turning them over in the dim porch light. I'm perfect, and my mama says I have to stay that way. Billy frowned. Normally, he'd think anybody who told you they were perfect needed to be taken down a peg or two, but something about the way she said it bothered him. No one's perfect, not even with doctor gloves on, he met her eyes. If you're not sick, then how come I've never seen you outside before? Oh, I'm not allowed to go out, not ever. Billy pinched his eyebrows together in confusion. Everybody goes outside, not me. Are you Juliet? Her eyes sparkled, and Billy had to admit she looked kind of pretty when that happened, not diseased at all. "Yes," she nodded, "Juliet Huff, and you're Billy?" "Manning, Billy Manning," he checked over his shoulder, getting antsy to leave. "You won't tell on me for coming here, will you?" He held his breath, praying she wasn't a tattletale wrapped in flannel. She shook her head. "No, of course not. I'd be in so much trouble if my parents knew I talked to anyone. I could never tell." "You've really never been outside?" Billy couldn't imagine being cooped up in his house for a week. Could it be possible she'd been trapped inside her entire life? "Never." Her long brown lashes shielded her downcast eyes. Butterflies went berserk in Billy's belly, that weird sensation in his gut that only a few girls had produced. Without meaning to, he climbed the stairs to her porch until he stood face to face with Juliet Huff. She didn't look like the disease girl he had pictured. She was actually kind of normal and, in a girl way, pretty. Her gaze rose to his face and his 10-year-old heart pounded. Was she waiting for him to say something? He wasn't even sure why he had come up there. "Happy birthday, Juliet." For a second, her mouth formed a surprised circle, and he cringed, sure he'd made a mistake. For all he knew, maybe her birthday was last week. He picked through her trash, but he was no detective. He was about to apologize and run away when she lifted her gloved hand up toward his face. He almost ran away, almost. Something made him stay. This girl wasn't sick. She seemed sad. He flinched when the cold rubber glove came in contact with his cheek. He hadn't expected her to touch him, but he couldn't bring himself to pull away. She stared at her finger on his skin as if she needed to make sure he was real or something. Finally, her hand dropped to her side. She started leaning closer to him, and time slowed. His pulse pounded in his ears as her lips lightly brushed his cheek, lingering against his skin. She smelled clean, too clean, almost like she'd never been dirty in her entire life. Her face lit up with a smile as she drew back. "Thank you for making my birthday wish come true, even if it was just for a minute." Heat rose in Billy's cheeks as he struggled to find something to say. He'd never been kissed by a girl, not even on the cheek. And what if she was diseased? Did he have it now? Before he could come up with anything to say, the sound of a woman's voice shocked him back to reality. The woman sounded angry. "Who is out there? I hear you." The color drained from Juliet's face when she spun around toward Billy again. Fear burned in her eyes. "She's coming. Run." That's it.
Ooh. Perfect. We'll be out on May 2nd, just a couple weeks away. How does everybody get it?
It is available everywhere for pre-order. If you pre-order it now, it will magically show up in your e-reader or your phone. So you can get it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Apple, Kobo, Google Play, anywhere where you get ebooks, you should be able to pre-order Perfect. And it will be out in paperback after release day in May.
Just search for Perfect by L.A. Kessler. And make sure that you have subscribed to this podcast. We have one more episode before Perfect comes out. And next week, we're going to reveal, well, that would be telling. Come back next week. You will not be disappointed.
It's a perfect crime.
It's not a perfect crime, but it's a good crime. Perfect. And it'd be perfect.
Perfect.
Perfect. Perfect.
Perfect. Perfect. Perfect.
Perfect.
Perfect.
Perfect.
Perfect.
Perfect.
Perfect. Perfect. Perfect. Perfect.
Everything's perfect.
Perfect. Perfect. And perfect.
Perfect. Oh, bang on my chest if you think I'm perfect.
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 Oh, God. What are we talking about next week?
I don't know. It better be something good.
You didn't send me anything about the next week.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll have to record that one later. I don't know.
Plot twist.
Yes.
You left it on a big hook, so yeah. I don't know what it's going to be, but I hope it's amazing.